Michael J. Faulkner has returned to the RSE fold. And in the meantime, you've strayed. You've stopped doing reduced Shakespeare.
Yeah, I've started doing actual Shakespeare again, which is what I did before I ever joined the RSC.
Are you taking everything back with you that you've learned from the reduced Shakespeare company?
Yes, and having to leave some of it behind.
What? How dare you.
Hi, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 206, Michael Faulkner's Measure. Michael Faulkner usually plays my roles in the RSC, the professor, the egghead, the pedantic and polysyllabic authority figure who isn't as smart as he thinks he is. But last week, Michael returned to us in a new capacity. He was our stage manager during our week-long run of Complete World of Sports Abridged at the Blumenthal Center in Charlotte, North Carolina. Before we chatted about the differences between acting and stage managing, Michael caught me up on his current acting gig.
I'm doing Measure for Measure at A Noise Within, which is a highly respected classical theater in Southern California.
Do they all talk like that?
No. But, you know, I feel like saying that, you have to speak like that. But
And it's in L.A., too. And L.A., contrary to the rumors, has a thriving theater scene.
It does.
You can't make a living at it, but there's a lot of actors out there, out of work, who want to work.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a lot of interesting theater out there that's in L.A. that is not just, you know, one-person vanity productions trolling for agents and casting directors.
And if you want to talk about L.A. theater, I think at some point in the last couple of years, there was an article in either Ovation or somewhere that said that there was a time had come where there were more productions going on in L.A. at one time than New York. Like, it had actually crossed that threshold. Mm. But as you said, the problem is that they're all 99-seat productions, which allow union actors to work for no money.
Right.
And...
Right. Thank you, Actors Equity.
And they are also... 90% of them are productions where they're just people that move out to L.A. wanting to be film actors and doing them to get seen, so they lack the heart and the passion and the camaraderie and the ensemble that if you really want to do theater, is what you do it for.
Exactly. And there's a lot of coming and going within these companies. But the company you're working with, A Noise Within, is respected, has been there a long time.
Yeah, 19th season. Yeah. They're groundbreaking right now on their brand new 350-seat theater in Pasadena that opens next season.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and they pay.
Wow. Wow. And they pay so well, you're on the road with us.
Yeah, exactly. I have an understudy going on this week, but, you know, the experience at Noise Within has been top-notch. I guess they had somebody else cast in the role, and I'd been auditioning for them for years. And gotten close, gotten called back for a few things, but no, never cast. And somebody was cast in this role, Elbow, in Measure for Measure, and 10 days into the rehearsal process, apparently found something else to do.
Oh, dear.
And I got a call out of the blue saying, Michael, it's Jeff Elliott, the artistic director of Noise Within. I've got a role for you if you want it. Just come and read with the director, basically.
Wow, that's awesome.
Oh, it's always great when you get a call like that.
Yeah. Well, and all those, and this, you know, the auditioning pays off. Even if you don't get the gig, auditioning pays off. Yeah. I auditioned for NYPD Blue like a dozen times before they cast me.
Yeah. And it's nice to know that people actually hold your picture and maybe wrote good notes on it and said, yeah, let's call him in.
Well, and clearly they remembered you.
Yeah.
Because I don't think, I doubt if anybody knows. Knowing how we work, I doubt anybody went to a pile and went searching. I bet somebody went, hey, what about that guy?
You know? Well, actually, they told me they did go to the pile.
Oh, okay. Oh, all right.
I think that they remembered me well enough when they saw the picture. They were saying, oh, yeah. They knew about, being that it's a Shakespeare clown, they knew about all my work with RSC.
Okay.
So they thought, let's call him in. And it's been great fun.
Now, you came into the rehearsal process 10 days after they'd begun.
Yeah.
What is their rehearsal process like? How does it differ from the RSC? Or B, because you came in so late, was it just like a reduced Shakespeare company
rehearsal process? Well, even I had 10 days left to rehearse, and even that was luxurious by RSC standards.
Yeah, it's true.
But the great thing was, they kind of, I felt like they were very hands-off in terms of letting the actor play and discover.
So you weren't different from the Riverdale Shakespeare Company. You weren't recreating my roles. No. You were creating your own version of Elba.
Yeah. And the thing is I got it. Apparently the guy who was in there before didn't get it.
So it was a mutual parting of the ways, it sounds like.
Yeah. Right. And when I came in, we sat down. We did like a modicum of text work where we talked through the scene, you know, which you need to do with real Shakespeare, figure out, you know, what this director's take is on it.
Yeah. And make sure you're both reading the text in the same way.
Yeah. But even at the first read-through, people were laughing because I got the jokes. Elbow's one of those classic Shakespearean clowns. He's the same clown as Dogberry in Much Ado and the same clown as Anthony Dull in Love's Labour's Lost. Shakespeare wrote to his company. That's the same as the RSC.
Right. This is the Will Kemp role.
Yeah. Yes, he had his his archetypes.
Yeah.
And so he wrote for them.
Yeah.
You know, this
yeah.
isn't Burbage. This isn't.
Right.
This doesn't have Burbage's verbiage, I should say.
Ooh, well done. That sounds like that should be the title of somebody's blog.
Yeah, it should be. I came in, and even at the first read-through, the fact that I got the jokes and got the malaprops, and he's classic. He does things like, you know, he says, instead of saying, my wife, whom I protest before heaven and your honor, meaning I declare her and swear her to be my good wife, he says, my wife, whom I detest.
Yes.
Very classic Shakespearean clown malaprop.
Yes.
I got it. So you have to deliver it the opposite way that it's intended. You know?
And the director and the cast is going, oh, thank you, Jesus. We don't need to explain it to this guy.
Yeah, breathe a huge sigh of relief. and it was just off and running from there, and it's just been a great process. I mean, they're very good actors at Noise Within. The whole company has been a pleasure to work with them. They get the material. They get Shakespeare. And it's a great production. It's been getting rave reviews.
Do you have time to, quote-unquote, discover your character or the choices you're going to make? Or do you just go in and say, I got 10 days left. Here's how I think Elbow goes. Boom. Try it. If it doesn't work, try something else.
Basically, it was the latter, but I think that was because I wasn't there from the beginning.
Mm. Yeah.
But his take on Measure for Measure, which is very good, is that it's a... The director's take is that it's a very... theocratic society, much like America, and you know, it's about the guy who's out on the outside, very pious and religious, and on the inside is burning with lust, and he wants to sleep with the nun.
Right.
It's that one,
right? Oh, that one that narrows it down.
Yeah. So it fits very well, and so the idea is that the society, in the absence of the good Duke, has become increasingly. Authoritarian.
Yeah.
So Elbow, the way that I kind of saw him fitting through the rehearsal process into this world is that he's the kind of idiot with power that is unleashed when all of a sudden authoritarianism is kind of thrown onto a free society.
Right, and nobody has seen it coming and prevented it from happening.
He was like an LA cop who worked at the Rampart Division.
Right.
And that worked out well because when I first met with a costume designer, which was about 3 days after I started rehearsal, she's like, here's how I picture you. And she's got me in jack boots and kind of almost a Nazi outfit, replete with mustache.
Oh, wow.
And an SS helmet. So it's,
wow.
It's great, though, to be, you know, dressed so jarringly, you know, authoritarian and yet be an absolute fool.
I believe that's as butch as I will ever have seen you.
Hi, I'm Donald Faison. You're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Podcast.
Where can you see the RSC? This week is your final opportunity to see the Reduced Shakespeare Company in 2010 at Lafayette College in Easton, Pennsylvania, and the Eisman Center in Richardson, Texas. But we'll be back with a vengeance in January 2011. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReduceShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific venue and ticket information.
What was the quote you were saying about an old teacher that you had about comparing Shakespeare to a Maserati. I think that's genius.
Yeah, this is my Shakespeare teacher, Jack Zerbe, who actually, we're here in Carolina. He teaches in North Carolina. He teaches at Guildford College in Greensboro, North Carolina. He said to me when I was learning Shakespeare at UC Santa Cruz, he said, Shakespeare's like a Maserati. It sucks in first gear, but you get it up to fourth gear, and it's the best thing you've ever driven.
That's really great. I love that.
I think it's so true. And there, and that's what I would have to say about this production of Measure for Measure. You know, is that it definitely, it gets it, and it's well done.
How do you get it into driving in a higher gear? Again, in a real production of Shakespeare, is it just simply a matter of speed? Is it comfortable familiarity? What is it?
Well, you know, I've taught Shakespeare too, and my take on it is that I think you have to play all Shakespearean characters as if they, even the tragic ones, as if they are 13 and just discovering hormones for the first time, and emotion. So the stakes are so high, and everything could fall apart at any moment. Even if you're Richard III and you're planning these elaborate, you know, or Iago, and you're planning this elaborate scheme, you have to constantly keep in mind that the whole thing could derail. And too often, I've seen professional productions of, say, As You Like It, where Rosalind is never played as if it could all fall apart at any moment. She's played like a supremely confident woman, and there's no drive.
Well, the stakes yes, you're absolutely right, and the stakes have to be high, like that, what you're talking about, that preteen, teenage, the hormonally charged lack of perspective you have at that time of your life, where you can't see any other way out. This girl is either going to love me or it's over.
And that's and Shakespeare characters, I mean, they say what they're feeling. You don't have to do any method work or subtextual work. You don't have to do any of that. It's all there. He gives it all to you. All you have to do is think the thought and breathe and say the word right away. It's like there's no filter between what you're thinking and what you're saying. It's all, and I think actually Meisner-trained actors can do really well with Shakespeare if they get a whole, if they get good language training, because they're so trained to be spontaneous and instinctual that you bring that spontaneity to Shakespeare, and boom, you can't lose.
Well, and I had a fellow student at Berkeley direct me at something when I was an undergrad, and he said, I don't know whether he said these words, but these are the words I now say when I'm repeating the point, which is that, you know, characters don't transition. Only actors transition from one beat, emotional beat, to another beat. People don't do that.
Right. And one of my favorite exercises, if I'm working with people on trying to get Shakespeare, because Shakespeare, their characters do think and change ideas in the middle of lines, but they do it on the button. They don't pause. And one of my favorite exercises is to say, okay, start moving, and every time you have a change of idea, just change direction, but don't stop. And if you actually physicalize the change, that it works real well.
Yeah, there's no such thing as a slow burn.
No. Although this is one thing that I'll say, coming from the RSC, you know, there are moments like, I know in the America show, if I'm doing it with Dom and Jerry or Mick and Dom, there's a moment after the Marilyn Monroe joke at the end of Act One, where we realized once, me and Dom and Jerry, that we could extend that laugh if we took our focus to Jerry as he said the joke, and then just as the laugh started to come down from the crest, if Dom and I then took a burn out to the audience, that would get a second one, and it would goose it and keep it going. And
that look of, can you believe what he just said?
Or mine was, Did they hear that? Oh no,
we're in trouble.
Is the Secret Service coming? You know,
particularly when you say that joke at the Kennedy Center.
Exactly. There's a moment in this. There's a great actor, Tom Moses, in this, playing Barnadine in this show, who's the guy who's might be executed in place of Claudio, and they bring Barnadine's head instead of Claudio's, but they can't execute him because he's this irascible drunk who's like, I can't be executed. I've been drinking all night. Moses is great in this role, and he comes in at the end, and the Duke says, ah, I hear you're I acquit you of everything. And he has no lines. He just kind of, he goes, shrugs, and walks off stage. Huge laugh. Biggest laugh in the show. And of course, and all of us, the entire cast is on stage and watches him go. My instinct is to then do a slow burn back to the audience and keep that laugh going.
Yeah.
But everybody else on stage is like, let's get on with the play.
Yes, I think we've given you that note once or twice before.
Yeah,
Michael, come on.
Get on with the play.
Now, it's a rare thing that you and I get to be out on the road together at the same time. We're here in Charlotte, North Carolina for our week-long run of Complete World of Sports Abridged. And you are here. You have joined us in a new capacity.
That's right.
Time. You're stage managing.
I know.
You're in charge.
It's bizarre. Yeah, and as such, I've instituted equity sign-in sheets. And
have you? I hadn't noticed.
And I've elected myself deputy equity deputy, and I have a list of concerns.
Oh,
that
boy.
I actually like.
You are drunk with power. all of our regular stage managers were busy for one reason or another, and we thought, well, what about Michael? Because the thing that's most important for us in a stage manager, aside from, again, being able to hang with him in a van or in a hotel lobby or whatever it is, or in the bar afterwards, is, timing. And you're an actor, so you've got the timing, so you understand how all the calls should be made in terms of the timing. But how is it different for you to just be a stage manager, first of all, but also to come back to the RSC as a stage manager?
Well, I miss being on stage,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah, I bet.
I mean, it's just, there's nothing more fun than that. But this has been a blast.
Yeah.
I was very nervous at the beginning, right, because I had no idea what load-in entailed. And thankfully, we had Dan Kay's longtime RSC veteran,
yes,
out to handle all that stuff. Because seeing him write cues, I mean, he got it done in about 45 minutes, and I thought, wow. I mean, and part of that is the Charlotte crew is just so on top of it. They did everything ready for us the day before we got here. So
great. That's good. Everybody made your job a little easier.
Yes.
Yeah, good.
Yes. And then, but call-wise, it has definitely been about timing. And I have to say, big props to the woman that prepared the book, who was your Merrimack stage manager.
Emily, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she has her notes are very specific, even down to the syllable of which word to call the cue on. And for the most part, I've been following her lead. There's a couple places where you've made changes and a couple places where, for me, I've had a different idea.
Well, and also you're great because you're up there in the booth and you know how we perform the show. So you've had suggestions for bits of timing and things that have been invaluable. But also you have a sense of music. You're a musician.
Yeah.
So you know music. So you can take your light cues within musical cues off the music, whereas some stage managers have to use literally the stopwatch, 17 seconds into the song, go with the light.
And that even that could not be accurate, because, who knows, you hit the stopwatch at the right time. Yeah, I like to, I'm a drummer, too. I think I started playing drums when I was 11, so it's about, it's just about hearing it and the opening to this show using Sirius is great, where it has to, the lights have to come on with the bomb.
Oh, yeah. Did you? And you play guitar, right?
I play guitar. My first instrument was piano, and my second instrument was drums. And then from, you're the same. If you learn piano, you can pretty much self-teach yourself most other things. Not the brass or the wind instruments, but
right. Well, I knew brass. I learned brass as a kid, so I can play the trumpet. I can play the baritone, which is the same fingering. The trombone, that different key, different thing. Does being a stage manager give you more, or having those skills, having this experience, does that give you more sort of career options as a actor, theater guy looking for work?
I would think it would. I mean, I've actually said to people that have, when we do RSC workshops with acting students and stuff like that, people say, how can I make a living as an actor?
Yeah.
And the number one thing I say to them is be a stage manager.
Well, yeah, it's absolutely true. But, learn all the crafts.
Yeah.
Learn it all.
Yeah, and the thing about it is the people I know that work the most and work the steadiest are the stage managers.
Yeah.
I mean, every stage manager I've met at regional theaters and stuff like that, they're working, nine months out of the year.
Yeah.
And maybe even some summer stock gigs. And so their pension and their health benefits are all well ensconced.
All right. Word to the wise.
Yeah.
Thank you, Michael J. Faulkner.
You're welcome.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your Shakespearean gear-shifting tips via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on our website podcast page, and you can post reviews at our podcast page on iTunes. You can interact with other fans at our website, reducedshakespeare.com, and our Reduced Shakespeare Company fan page at facebook.com. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, Shakespearean clown Matthew Croke, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Matt Weaver. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Donald Faison, whose sci-fi movie Skyline opens this weekend. Quincy and I cannot wait to see it. And thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 206 618ths of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less. So much less. So much less.